Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
And welcome to The Rest Is Money with me, Steph McGovern.
And with me, Robert Peston.
So we have another fabulous guest for you. And today's can claim he's done something that no one else has in the last 150 years. He started his own bank. Dave Fishwick started Burnley Savings and Loans in 2011. And he did this to try and provide peer-to-peer lending in the local community, which was he was inspired to do because he could see that there were lots of small businesses and people where he lived who were struggling to borrow money because of their poor credit histories. Since then, he's provided over £30 million in loans and he donates all of the profits from the interest to charity. And yet, he doesn't have a background in finance at all. He left school at 16, built up his own business selling secondhand vans and minibuses. And if all of this sounds familiar, it's because you might have watched it on the telly. He actually had his story adapted for a Netflix film starring Rory Kinnear as him. It's called The Bank of Dave. So yeah, loads to talk to him about, everything from entrepreneurship, community finance and the state of banking in the UK. So, I mean, there's loads to talk to him about, isn't there, Robert?
Yeah, there is. And I have to say, we talked a bit about, you know, how the establishment stops change. I think it is important to point out that although you say it's the first bank to, technically he's not a bank because he hasn't got a license.
Yeah.
And, you know, some would say it's a bit of a scandal that the Bank of England hasn't yet given him a license. And we'll talk to him a bit about that.
Dave, it's lovely to see you. You and I have had several chats over the years. And I remember the last time I saw you was when the film about your life was about to come out. And it's been a mega success, hasn't it? And you're doing the film and the second one now, aren't they?
Yeah, the first one ended up being Netflix's biggest hit, biggest independent British hit they've ever had. And the second one with the fastest commissioned Netflix movie in their history. So it was the fastest commissioned one they've ever done, the sequel.
So it was Shall We Do One? Yes, we shall. And then that was that.
Very quickly, we'll do another.
Yeah. I mean, how weird has it been having a film made about your life? Because this is all about you and Bank of Dave, and we're going to get into all of that and how it all started. But just now, like, how weird is it that someone's played you and played your wife and played your mates and your family?
Yeah, I mean, they were in my house up to a few weeks ago filming the second one. And it's really weird when you're upstairs, it's 6:30 in the morning, you're getting out of bed and taking your pyjamas off and getting dressed. And downstairs, they're shouting, action, you know? And there's a guy downstairs that looks more like you than you do, playing you with your wife that's downstairs that's actually in bed next to you. And there's pictures all over the house of them, not me.
Yeah.
And when you come down in the morning and see it above the fireplace, that is very strange.
Very surreal. So take us back to the beginning then, Dave, of how this all started. Because you loved cars, didn't you? And it was cars, vehicles, minibuses that got you to all of this.
Yeah, I left school at 16. Absolutely useless. No qualifications whatsoever. And I ended up on a building site. My parents had no money whatsoever. We had to work. So I was on a building site as a builder's labourer on between £30 and £40 a week on the YTS. I've got a wage packet here that my mum kept from all them years ago, which I'll share with you and the listeners after on the website. And it's £40 odd, including overtime. So I went from builder's labourer to building the first new high street bank for 150 years in Britain. And along the way, I wanted to get involved in cars. I loved cars, but I couldn't afford a gallon of petrol. How do you buy a car with no money? You've got to think outside the box. You know, I went around all the garages. I got one of them to lend me an old pod exchange. I cleaned it. I scrubbed it. I sold it for 100 quid. I brought them the agreed amount of money, which he wanted £70 returning, which were a lot 35 years ago. And I asked him, could I do it again? He said, of course you can. You've paid me. So I did it again and again and again until I had enough money to buy the first car. So at nights, I was scrubbing cars up and cleaning them. Through the day, I was working on the building site. And then I decided to kick the sticks away and start working for myself. So very, very early in the morning, I run the markets at Manchester, selling T-shirts, sweatshirts, anything I could buy cheap. And through the day, I was doing the cars up. And at night, I used to race down the motorway, up the steps of the nightclub, bucket of records in each hand, and straight in there. Just join us, good evening, welcome along. Where else could you be? It's Friday through to Saturday morning. I was a DJ. So I worked three jobs.
I love, do that again. I love the DJ voice. Yeah. I think
Steph McGovern, of course, Robert Peston, and the rest is money. Where else could you be? Welcome along.
Love this. So Dave, you know, love of vehicles, you're building up this business. And then it was minibuses where it really
changed. That's right. Somebody rang me and they said, you know, Dave, I've no cars for you this week. But first it were vans. I've no cars this week, but I've got this old van. I thought, vans, they're full of cement and things. And they take a lot of cleaning, but do you know, back then, people bought vans from farmyards. They didn't buy vans from these shiny big showrooms that's there now. So I thought, do you know what? Let's have a go. And in life, you never know when these opportunities come. And you've got to grab them with both hands. So I went along, I scrubbed the van up, I cleaned it, I advertised it. I had a phone about this big. And for the listeners, that's about 2 foot long. It was a Motorola 8000.
Oh, I remember when I was first a cub reporter, I was on The Independent. There was one mobile phone for the entire newsroom. And, you know, it was my joy to be able to take it home at weekend.
Yeah, and ring somebody. Yeah,
it was so exciting.
Didn't it cost so much to ring, though? That was the problem back then. It was about £3 to ring somebody. But if it rung, it was important.
Yeah.
So I advertised the van. I had a mobile phone because I was always out of the office. And I got this phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday when the auto trader came out. I'm ringing about the van. I thought, van? Oh, yeah, the Astromax. Yeah, I'd like to come and buy it. They come and bought it. Do you know what? 10 minutes later, another phone call. I'm ringing about the van. The van. Eureka. Vans. That was the future. Never mind cars. Got rid of all the cars. Let's start with vans. Got myself a little pitch. Got some vans. Started to sell them.
Are you still on your own, basically, at this point? Or have you got employees?
Well, my dear wife, Mrs. F., she is so wonderful. And I met Mrs. F through when I was DJing. She come over to me in the nightclub and said, excuse me, you're playing rubbish records. And I said, well, come and have a look in me box. And I let her look through me record box. And that's how we met, Robert. But my dear wife.
So she was honest. I like that.
You know, she was amazing. And I were playing rubbish records because I didn't have any money for good ones.
Yeah.
I used to go down the flea market, buy pounds of the records, which were 10 pence each, 10 old records, give me something new to play each week. Where records back then were 2 and 3 quid a piece. If you bought 10 of them, that were your wages gone.
Yeah. So you were with your wife. I don't know if you were married then, but so with the minibus business, what was happening? So you were still on your own?
Well, she came. I invited her down to the garage a few days after she said I were playing rubbish records. And she turned up in this.
You invited her to a garage for a date?
Yeah. So they were at my little garage. I rented a little pitch with about 12 old rusty cars and vans and stuff on it. And she came along in this lovely Citroen car. And I've got a point here. And ladies, when you listen to this now, this is the secret to a man's heart.
It is Radio 2, ladies.
So I come running out and I saw this new Citroen diesel car. And I said, can I look under the bonnet? She thought that were a bit strange. And I opened the bonnet and there was this great big diesel battery. And I thought, that's it. I ran back in my little porter cabin, got my jump leads, connected it to this diesel battery and jump leaded every single car on my pitch. And I thought, wow, because none of the batteries worked on my old cars. Yeah. So I thought, she's a keeper. The diesel battery with a secret. And we've been together 28 years.
Oh, and she features in the film with you as well. Yeah. So the business now, where are we at with it? So you've got the minibus business, but you know, you get to a point where it's really successful, don't you?
Yeah, well, we go from vans and then I get the phone call about the buses. And I thought, a bus? I don't want a 30-foot long bus that's 12 foot wide and 12 foot high and loads of seats. But sometimes, like I said earlier, in life, when an opportunity comes, you've got to grab it with both hands. So I bought it, I scrubbed it, I cleaned it, I advertised it. Guess what? I'm ringing about the bus. And let me tell you, that was a good decision because today I'm the largest supplier of minibuses in the country. So you never know when that's coming.
Yeah. You've got this successful business, but then getting to the point where you're setting up a bank, this was to do with the people in your community, wasn't it, needing help? You started to see people struggling.
Well, people coming along to buy buses off me. And I used to just fill the forms in, send them off to the local bank, and the bank would give them a loan to buy a bus. And then overnight, that just stopped. The banks just stopped lending to people. So I thought, have they done something wrong? Have they got a CCJ? Have they not paid a bill? But you know what, guys? They'd done nothing wrong. It was the problem of the banks just decided they didn't want that sort of business anymore. They just stopped lending in 2008.
What year is this, sorry?
2007, 2008.
It was the credit crunch.
It was a credit crunch. And they just decided they didn't want to lend to real people anymore. And I thought, well, if I believe in these people, and I know what they're buying, of course I do. I built the bus. I know what they're going to do with it. They're going to pick kids up from school in the morning. They're going to go and do their stag parties and hen parties at nights. So I thought, well, why don't I lend them the money?
It was an extraordinary period, wasn't it? I mean, we were working on it. So many businesses that couldn't borrow. I mean, it was really
And it was businesses that were like hundreds of years old as well that suddenly weren't good for the money. Well, they were told that they weren't.
Some of these bus drivers have been at it 30, 40, 50 years. You know, the bus still were going to pick the kids up in the morning. And so I lent them the money. They paid me back. And do you know what, Robert? This banking malarkey, I thought, it's not that difficult.
So this is basically, you've got a bank account, you've got some cash in it, and you're just lending your own savings.
At that point, I was lending my own money and they were paying me back. And I thought...
And how much were you lending?
Oh, thousands. I mean, a bus is averaging 20, 30 grand. So I lent many hundreds of thousands.
Blimey. But you must have been doing pretty well. You'd accumulated quite a lot of cash.
Well, over the years, I went from vehicles to property. You know, and the largest company I've got is in America now, you know. So we invest in very solid stocks and shares and things that really make sense. And that's the biggest thing I've got. And that grew from very small beginnings because that's another thing the banks think they're the only people good at. And if a lad from Burnley with no qualifications, if I can do it, then anybody can.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, well, it's not good just lending people money for buses. How do I help other businesses in my community? Because none of them could borrow any money. So I thought, well, I'll start a little bank. And that's how it started. That's where I got the idea from. I thought I can help other people.
And the idea being that you would lend them money, you would charge them interest, would you? And then...
Well, this is the idea. I wanted to open a community bank run by the community to benefit the community rather than the bonus culture. I thought, right, okay, I want to give Granny the best rate of interest on the high street. I then want to lend that to people who can't borrow from the high street bank through no fault of their own. And the profit after the overheads were paid, I want to give the difference to charity. I thought, it can't be that difficult. I want to open a tiny, tiny bank. But let me tell you, that was 13 years ago. And it's been one of the most difficult things I've ever, ever been involved in because there's so many big organisations that just do not want it to happen.
So I think it's important at this point just to sort of talk to those listening about what a bank is in a sort of definitional sense. And what I mean by that is that you cannot call yourself a bank, you cannot take deposits unless you get approval from the Bank of England.
Yes, yes. You need a deposit taking license to take money from the public. But, however, there's always a way through the system.
So you weren't at the beginning, obviously, and might talk a bit later about why you're still in the process of trying to get authorised in that sense. But explain to people what you can do in finance without a banking license, because you were making these loans. And then at a certain point, you started using other people's money to make loans. But talk to us about what's allowed and what you've been doing.
Well, to get to that point, I needed to go and speak to the bankers. And the head of the bankers was a guy called Andrew Hilton. So I went to see Andrew Hilton here in London many years ago. And I said, Andrew, I just called him Mr. Hilton. I said,
and what was his role?
He was the head of the banking association. He was
the British Bankers Association. Oh,
he was the top man.
He was the British Banking Association.
That sort of realm of person. You know, he was very, very educated. And I went to see him and he said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Burnley. That put him off for starters. And then from there, I said, I'd like to open a tiny bank. And he said, what did your parents do? And I thought, well, what's that got to do with anything? I said, well, my dad were a farm labourer in the morning. And in the afternoon, he worked in the mill as a tackler fixing looms. And he said, oh, no, no, no. I said, what does your mum do? I said, she's a weaver. Right. And he said, did you go to Oxford or Cambridge?
Did he actually say that?
He actually said it. And if people want to see it, on my documentaries, it's still out there, the documentaries. So I think it's still on Netflix, the documentaries. And they can see it. They'll see Andrew Hilton in the documentary series, or we can post a clip at the end of this, and they'll be able to see him saying that. And he said, so you've not got the correct parents, you've not been to the correct school, and you're not from the correct place. He said, you've no chance. And I thought, oh, I wanted to stick him in a wheelie bin. But I thought, I'm going to do it anyway. So I come back, and I worked very hard with my right-hand man, David Henshaw, who's been 60 years in banking, the most honest, ethical man on the planet, and my legal team, Chris Moss, who's been awesome, who has been to Oxford. So the thing is, you don't have to have gone to Oxford or Cambridge to open a bank. You just have to employ somebody that has.
But also, this is sort of nuts. When I first took an interest in these things a long time ago, the people who actually ran the banks... So the most famous of these was a bloke called Brian Pittman, who ran Lloyds. They didn't get to university at all, right? They were people who were indentured by the banks. They usually joined from school at about 16 and they worked their way up. The chairman were all very posh and went to Eton, and, you know, some of them weren't bright enough to go to Oxford. But nonetheless, you know, the people who were chairman of the big banks were posh. But the people who ran them, and this was the old days before the whole thing got professionalised, these were, you know, a bit like the newspaper industry where I started. People who actually ran these businesses, who did all the important work, were sort of apprenticed when they were pretty young and worked their way to the top. So it's sort of weird that by the time you're going to talk to him, and it is true that, you know, by the time we get to the financial crisis, you know, it is a very professionalized industry. And it is true that people who were then making what were at the time catastrophic decisions about how to manage banks, they were, you know, in inverted commas, highly educated and been to universities like Oxbridge. But my God, they mucked it up.
Highly yes. educated, but thick.
Or reckless in some yeah. cases. Yeah.
Well, I've yeah. got lots of views on what should be happening in the banks and who should be running them. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it should be people with no qualifications like me. You know, people say I should go into politics and things, and I've got no qualifications. And to be in politics, you probably got a degree. I went straight to work on buildings.
That's a little rubbish. I can't believe you just said that. What people go into politics, this is one of the problems with the people who are currently in politics. You've got to have experience of the world. You've got to have practical knowledge. You've got that in spades. I mean, you know, there should be people like you in politics. Of course there should.
Well, every time I go anywhere near that sort of regulated world, there's somebody like Mr. Hilton that says, you're not from the correct school. Because I come from a place called Burnley, and it's the centre of the universe for lots of reasons, but it's a very, very tough place to live. It's actually just been announced that it's the most affordable place to live in the country. It's got a lot of problems, but it's a wonderful, wonderful place full of wonderful people.
You know, the presenter of our sister podcast would agree with you.
Yeah. Alistair Campbell's a big Burnley fan.
Yeah, I know Alistair very well. He does support what we do in a big way. And we have massive support right across all the parliamentarians. I have a lot that come and have a pitch taken with me at the Bank of Dave, which is really nice. And just recently, Rishi Sunak stood up in the Houses of Parliament and answered a question with Joe Gideon about the Bank of Dave. And he said, he didn't use the word Bank of Dave, he actually said Burnley Savings and Loan. So he fully knew who I was. And he said he really likes what I'm doing and he wanted me to be introduced to Andrew Griffiths, the Treasury Secretary. And he said he would do that. And do you know what? He did exactly what he said he would do. Within a few weeks, I had a meeting with Andrew Griffiths and then Kevin, the business minister as well. And they're trying very hard to help me push forward.
Just to be clear, what can they do? Because this is a decision made by the Bank of England. It's a process. What have the government said they'll do to help you get your license?
What we've done is, to go back to Mr. Hilton. So as soon as he said no, we found a way with my legal team, who have been to the posh schools, to work in a peer-to-peer lending sort of way where we could help Granny get the best rate of interest on her savings and then lend it out.
So tell us where the money's coming from. Who's providing the
loan? We had millions of pounds from thousands of people in the Burnley area. Some had £100.
It's like a crowdfund type thing.
Well, it was more like a peer-to-peer lending, but we did a hybrid version of it.
And how do you raise the money? Is it online?
No, people come in and they have an old-fashioned building society type book. We write it in. We've got all the cloud.
It's written down.
It's written down. Do you know what? We've got, and this is David H., my right-hand man, 60 odd years in banking. He absolutely makes sure every night everything's written down. Now, bearing in mind, we've lent over £34 million to thousands of people and businesses all over the UK. So it's not a tiny operation. It's not a big one, but it's not a tiny one.
And how do you make sure that the businesses you're lending to are creditworthy?
That's a really good question. My right-hand man, David H. again, he as is a genius with manual underwriting. Manually underwriting used to be what banks did many years ago. The old-fashioned bank manager knew who you was, he knew where you lived, he knew what your business were, and a lot of the time he went to your christenings, weddings, birthdays. David is that person. So he's taught my team how to look at people as people. So he looks at paperwork, we do not credit score, and if somebody's had a problem in the past, we look at why they've had a problem. And we look if they've got over it.
And what's that been like in terms of, you know, has that been a successful way of risk assessing
it's
people?
It's the only way, Steph. It's we have less than 5% bad debt after nearly 13 years. We have less than 5% bad. That's better than a high street bank.
And can I just ask if, so I come to you, let's say I've got a 100 quid that I want to give you or a 1,000 quid I want to give you. Do I know who you have lent the money to?
Well, this is what we did at the beginning. So we did a peer-to-peer lending scheme where you was giving the money to me. We had it all written up. It was like a bond type peer-to-peer.
So
it was
a hybrid. So you personally were at risk?
I personally were at risk. So I still am. I underwrite every single penny that goes through that place.
Crikey.
So if anybody loses, it's me.
So and what rate of interest are you paying on that?
5%. Loan?
So you're paying 5%?
We lend it out at more than that. Starting round about 7.9 and going up, depending on the risk we're taking. Now, if somebody comes to me that doesn't need a subprime lend and they're cleaner than they think they are, then we work with 250 lenders across the country who are very ethical and moral, and we'll get them into the cheapest we possibly can.
What, as in you'll send them to another bank?
We'll work with them. We'll actually get them the loan through, not necessarily banks, but we will find the best
like
possible way to lend.
Whatever.
And do you take a broker's fee on that?
Yes, we get probably a couple of hundred quid max, less than 100 quid on some of the other things. And that is given away.
And just to be clear, you're personally at risk, but I think you earlier said all profits are given to charity. Is that
all
right?
Profits after overheads are given away.
Right. And are you an overhead? Do you charge the business anything?
Not for 12 and a half years, nearly 13 years, I've not took a penny. And there's a reason for that, is there is no bonuses paid at Burnley Savings and Loans, and I have not took a penny on purpose. I've got millions of pounds of my own money in there, and I've not took a penny. I truly believe in what I'm doing.
But you're presumably making a return on the money anyway.
I don't make, personally, I make nothing. Not
oh, really?
One penny.
So even the money that you put in...
I don't even take interest on my own money.
Wow.
It goes back in... Because it's so expensive to apply for these licences, Robert, that it's just... You've got to truly believe in what you're doing. And it's no good me going on about bonuses if I'm taking them.
But can I just ask you, is this pure philanthropy? I mean, presumably you own the institution. Is there
yes.
a world in which you sell it and you make money?
Never, ever. I've been offered... One of the big banks approached me and another financial institution approached me. And one in particular comes to mind, where they wrote a number down on a piece of paper and slid it across, and I slid it back. And they said, they give me a pencil, not a pen, a pencil, which I thought was a bit old-fashioned. And they said, write down what number you want. And I said, it will never, ever be for sale. There is no number. I will never sell it. It will go to my grandchildren. I have two boys. It will go to my grandchildren and be left in perpetuity. It will always, always be there to do the right thing.
There is still loads more to ask you, Dave, but let's go to a quick break. Can I ask why it, because it sounds like it's working really well, what you're doing. Why do you want to be a bank?
Well, the problem were when we started the peer-to-peer system, and I really want to get to this bit because it's really important. When we started the peer-to-peer system and we then took the risk, it was working perfectly. We had a £12 million book. We had about £12 million out. We had less than 5% bad debt. Granny were getting the best rate of interest. It was wonderful. And then all of a sudden, the regulation changed for peer-to-peer lending. Now, I was working on a hybrid peer-to-peer, and they said to me, look, Dave, cease and desist. And I said, why? And this is what's in the movie when they try and shut me down. And they said, well, we've just looked at this. My documentary series had just come out. It did really well. We ended up with BAFTAs and all sorts of things. And the letter come through. It were a fax. So it was quite a few years ago. Cease and desist. And I said, what's the problem? If you're doing this peer-to-peer hybrid system that your lawyers have designed, we need you to put risk in it for Granny. Granny has to take the risk. You cannot longer take the risk. If you take the risk, you'll go to prison. Granny has to take the risk. I said, are you mad? After all what's happened in 2008 and all these people have lost this money, you want me to give an 80-year-old lady the risk? I chopped my left leg off first. So that is when the fighting started, and that is when I fought back in a big way.
And where are you at with it now then? Like, do you think you're going to get a licence?
Well, where we're at now is... We're allowed to take certain money off certain people in certain industries. So I'm allowed to take money from businesses, I'm allowed to take money from limited companies, I'm allowed to take money from people who earn a certain amount of money.
So
I'm allowed
professional
to,
investors, effectively.
Yeah, well, just business. What I like to do is I like to look for business people, high net worths, in the Lancashire area that are able to give me the money that they want to be lent out in that area. I like to take money from Lancashire and lend it out in Lancashire. And it's business money. There are people who've done okay in life and they've put some back in. Now, we have the licenses to do everything we want. We've got tons of licenses. We're about anti-money laundering. And like all these new things now about car finance and people been, that's going to be a huge thing. And I'll come back and talk to you about that because nobody's really talking about what that really means. I really understand what that really means. And there's an awful lot of big companies that are going to have a real problem. Mm. And we're not one of them. It were all down to taking commissions based on the amount of interest you charge people.
Yeah, it was shocking.
It was really bad. And nobody's talking about that.
Yeah.
But I know Martin's done some. Martin's amazing.
Martin Lewis.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I know Martin very well. I worked with him on GMB and this morning, and he's wonderful. But I can really, really open that up. That is going to be a storm that's on its way. Because I remember being in the garage and one of the big banks coming along to me, so one of my minibus garages, and saying to me, look, Dave, if you get this person on this amount of interest, we'll give you this. I said, you better get out quickly. You know, they don't understand about customer service. They just don't.
What is it then that makes you do what you do? What makes you tick? Like, why are you doing all this?
Well, back to the bank manager coming to the garage again, when they've been given that money by the government, and they come to me and said, look, Dave, we've been given this money to give out to businesses. We don't actually want to give it to anybody that's not going to give it to his bank. So we want to give it to people. We're definitely going to get it back. I said, well, I don't need any money. Yeah, but I know you don't, but you can have it really cheap and you can do something with it. I said, you need to go and lend it to the people it's been given to you to lend out. You know, there's so many wrong things going on in the financial world at the moment. And when I was listening to your podcast, it made me think about, you know, we could really dig down into some of these things over the coming months and years, because I really, really do see it. The letters I get, I mean, I've had a letter recently asking for a loan for baby milk, for formula.
Ugh.
So on one side, you've got bankers' bonuses being uncapped. That's what the government's thinking is a good idea at the minute. Tens of millions of pounds bonuses. Yeah. If we don't pay them that, they're going to go because they're the best. Well, I say get rid of them because they've not done very well up to now. And then the other side, they're writing to me, can I have a loan for baby milk? And we just give them the money.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I get a school, Park Primary School in Colne, and a headmistress writing to me saying, look, the children are coming to school starving, David. Yeah. Is there anything you can do? I said, send me a list of what you need. And they sent me a list of kitchen equipment. We got it all straight away, sent it. And then I said, send me a list of what food you need. So I said, how much you need for a year's food? She told me. I said, 3 months before it runs out, ring me again. Now, in October, she rung me again because it was going to be the end of the year. And I've just bought another year's supply of food. I feed 330 children every morning. That's what the Banker Dave does. So on one side, you've got bankers' bonuses being uncapped. And on this side, children are coming to school starving because of the credit crunch. The world's mad.
I mean, the thing that is a scandal is here you are doing, you know, what one would like to see businesses in general doing, which is taking social responsibility. But what did you say? Your total loans are 30 million?
34 million.
34 million. I mean, truthfully, it's a drop in the ocean of, you know, banks whose balance sheets are a trillion, right?
Yes, yes.
And so, I mean, it's great that you are making a difference, but, you know, you're a drop in the ocean.
But the problem is somebody like Diane's Dog Biscuits, Diane, who makes dog biscuits for dogs, who could not borrow from anybody else. She comes along. She ended up having one of those electric meters fitted and it burnt the house down. And she was making dog biscuits in the house. Sorry, in the shop part of the house. And she needed to get back on her feet. So I lent her the money to get going again. We bought ovens and we've bought kitchen equipment and we've got her back on the road again. And now she's about to employ somebody. She's
That's
about
great.
To open a little shop.
Yeah.
But they're the ones that we help.
Did she try and get help from the banks?
Yes, yes.
And they all said no?
They're not interested. What the banks want to do is they want to give you nothing in interest. They want to send that money abroad. They want to make fortunes with it, with using what I call financial weapons of mass destruction, which is credit default swaps, and so be it, and so on that. And then if it wins, they make a fortune. If it loses, the taxpayer bails them out. It's like banks who rob people get paid bonuses, but people who rob banks go to prison. And the world just really needs to change.
I mean, the banks would argue that, you know, I guess to Robert's point of what you do is great, and but it's on a very small scale, and they need to, you know, think about this on a much bigger picture because the risk is greater, and there will be lots of businesses who are well supported by traditional banks.
Do you have a vision for how your approach to banking, given the enormous vested interests we're going to have to overcome, but your approach to banking could be rolled out?
Yeah.
So that it's about more than your local community.
Yes.
That we see this kind of focus on the genuine needs, both of savers and borrowers.
Yes.
That we literally haven't seen for 100 years.
David Henshaw, Joe Gideon, and the politicians at the moment, with myself and Chris Moss, we are working with the government on looking at how it can be done. I'm ferociously protective over it because what I don't want to do is for somebody to go and take money off granny and spend it. So my idea is this. There's lots of entrepreneurs across the country who has done well in their town or their city, like where you're from, Steph. There's people up there that have done really well. They could put their hand in their pocket and probably will do, if it's going to that area and it's going to be given back to that area. And I was out in Australia a few months ago with the mover, and in Australia, it's exactly the same problem as here. In Billabong, it's exactly the same as what's happening here. So there's miners in them places across the world in Australia where they've got money. So they need to stand next to every loan. So they need to be the person that stands next to the loan. If you put a bank of Dave or a bank of Steph or a bank of Robert in each one of the 1,000 large towns and cities across the UK, all lending out over the next few years, 30-odd million, that then gets to billions. That then solves the problem of community banking.
Well, I mean, if anyone can do it, you can.
Can I just mention one last thing? The rise and rise of the loan shark. I've just done a big piece on loan sharks, and it's got 17 million views. What's happening is community banks are closing 54 banks a month. That's one this morning and one this afternoon. Now, because they're closing, cash machines are closing. The high street's descending into chaos. Shops are closing, so people don't have anywhere to get the money from. And now people are going into pubs and things. If somebody's there with £500 or £1,000 in the pocket, they're getting it. Now, if you look on my Twitter or my TikTok app, Bank of Dave or at Fishwick David, you will see that piece. Or you can just Google it. You can see that piece. I met a real loan shark who hurts people, and I wanted to see why and how he's operating. And I wanted to see how bad it is to be able to see how we can fix it. And he says, I hurt people, Dave. He said,
why did he tell you this?
He met me because he hates the banks, and he thinks the banks shutting down are increasing his business tenfold. It's the rise and rise of the loan shark. So this banking thing isn't just about big banks, small banks, whatever. Post offices, that's no good because they sell postage stamps and birthday cards. So they can't be banks. The hubs, they've only opened 30 out of the 100 and odd they're supposed to have opened. So it's the rise of the loan shark and the payday loans, which is where the Netflix movie goes.
And it is, as you say, it's a massive social problem, and it's brilliant that you're highlighting it. I've been slightly staggered in recent times that people have just pretended it's not there.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to meet one on camera, for real, to prove they're there.
Well, we talked about it, I can't remember what episode it was, a few episodes ago, about how they're not the people you might think they are anymore either. You know, it might be there was a woman, wasn't there, who was like a granny who was arrested and charged with, found guilty of being a loan shark.
That's right, in the 60s. So, yeah. The pensioners, women pensioners with the team come along and they hurt you if you don't pay.
Yeah.
Now, that's what's going to happen. If we don't get community banking, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going out to America next week to talk to them about it.
Yeah. But what I want to know as well is, do you still DJ?
You know what? I'd love to come back for one night only.
I think it should be what about the Rest Is Money anniversary party?
Yes. Rest Is Money anniversary party. Who's going to be joining us? Dedication request, come and see us. If we've got it, we'll play it for you.
I love it.
Might be an appropriate moment to wind up. What do you
reckon? I think it will, definitely.
Thank you
for coming in for a chat.
And come back and talk to us about the scandal of car finance.
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
Will do.
Right, that's it from us on The Rest Is Money. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.